Phil Hendry Show at 1-800-449-8686. On Sunday night, 7:30, I'll be guest starring on King of the Hill on Fox. That's at 7:30, King of the Hill on Fox. 7:30 Pacific. Is it 8:30 Central? Something like that?
I think so.
7:30, 8:30 Central. King of the Hill. Also, if you would like to design a homepage for our website, you know, just for laughs. You know, we've been bellyaching about the website quite a bit. And so what I'm simply saying is, because somebody told me in the office the other day, they said, well, why don't you just shut up? Why don't you shut up about your website? And I said, geez, you got a point. Somebody came up to me and closed their fist and had like a roll of nickels and just belted me right across the jaw. So a little bit of blood started coming out of my right nostril. And they said, shut up about your website. I said, you've got a point. Actually, with all my broken teeth, it was more like, hey, you got a point. And so what we decided to do is, if you'd like to design a homepage for our website, go to philhendryshow.com. Actually, I think the homepage looks great. Just design a page for the website, any page, and email it to webmaster@philhendryshow.com. We will post all of your contributions on the website. We'll have a vote, and the guy that wins. No prizes, no money, nothing of substance, really. Just a boot in the ass and a howdy thanks a lot from the Phil Hendry Show. Also, I'd like to remind you that the Best of the Phil Hendry Show CD for 1999, Communism is Neat, is available on our website at philhendryshow.com. It's $23.50, $3.50 shipping and handling. $20 for the CD. It goes to benefit My Friend's Place, a resource center for homeless and runaway kids in Hollywood. And we appreciate the support that you give us there. And I want to, tonight, take a moment to talk about something. It's always kind of funny for me to talk about things that are very personal to me, especially when it's going to be emotional. And this is very emotional because a very dear friend of mine passed on today. And I was thinking back on all of the things that he did for me. He was kind of a big brother. See, my home, the one that I grew up in, was a little, you know, there was a lot of turmoil in my home. My father and mother split up. Happens in American families, happens to the best families sometimes. And I was sort of at a loss, and this guy took me under his wing. We went to ball games, did the things that a big brother does for you. He was a very, very close friend, developed kind of from a father figure and a big brother figure into a friend as the years went by. He told me a lot. He taught me a lot. About being a pro, about showing up for work every day, about going places that other people might not want to go. That's where you find the extra edge creatively, about allowing, freeing your mind up to create, even when you think it's something that's wrong or won't fly, just going to places that it takes a little bit more courage for people to go to. And he taught me about taking chances and risking things for success. He taught me the value of education. He was well-read. He had an immense library. He didn't get out a lot, but when I visited him, we did a lot of reading. And yeah, there were times when he did get out, we'd have a drink, you know, run around a little bit. You know, when I was of age, you know, we would go into bars and meet girls together. Just the kind of a guy that, you know, you'd want to have as a friend and, yeah, and a mentor. And when I got the word of his passing today, I thought back on all of those things. I thought back on just all the times that we had together and all of the good times that they were, and I felt sad. I felt genuinely sad. And, yes, I shed a tear because there's nothing wrong with that. When it is shed in gratitude, not self-pity. There was no self-pity. It was gratitude that I had known, that I'd known this great, great person for as many years as I did. I first met him when my parents took me to Atlanta. We went to the Atlanta Zoo. This was in 1972, and he was there entertaining people. near the primate house in his own cage. And when I heard that Willie B., the gorilla, died today at the age of 41, I took a knee. I took a knee and thought about everything that he'd meant to me. Willie B., yeah, I know you were a silverback gorilla, but it doesn't mean that you didn't know how to talk or read. And I learned that. I learned that you could speak, read, and operate not a car, but one of those golf carts, because you took me around the zoo there. I remember that one time you took me around the zoo in the golf cart. God damn it, I'm going to miss you, man. I'm going to miss you a lot. Willie B. the Ape, dead at 41. If you think the preceding story that I just told is funny, or if you thought that it was sophomoric and crap, please log on to philhenryshow.com, and there'll be a special section there where you can vote on whether Phil's gorilla story was funny or not. Go to philhenryshow.com and vote on whether you think Phil's gorilla story about Willie B. and about how I grew up with this guy and it turned out to be an ape that could read and drive a golf cart was funny. Just to let you know, when we were preparing the show, I thought it would be funnier to establish first that it was an ape who was my mentor and then go into the fact that he could drive and read. However, I was overruled by my producer, Mike Schaefer, who thought the way that I rendered it just now was the way to go. So, do you agree with me, or do you agree with Mike, or do you wish we'd just both go away, just both step in front of one of those Metro Line trains? Please log on to philhenryshow.com and vote, and there'll be a little place there on the website. Do you have a computer in there, Mike? I need to ask this. Do you know how to use a computer? No, I'm kidding. We don't have one in there, but you got to go log on and see how the voting goes. We'll check into the voting on whether you thought the ape story was funny. Okay, 1-800-449-8686. That's 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show. Show 1-800-449-8686. Here is Monterey Park on the Phil Henry Show. Hello.
Yeah, how you doing, Phil?
Good.
Phil, I want to ask you a question on Mariah Carey, because she was on the cover of Rolling Stone this month, and I have a bet with my brother and my cousin. All right. Okay, and they say that she's black. I mean, my brother says she's black. My cousin says she's, like, white, and I think she's either Italian or something. Is she black? Or is she, do you know?
Mariah Carey, I don't know. I don't know what she is.
Well, why does this guy say she's black?
I guess she looks, I don't know, if does she look black? I think she's half black.
Well, that means she's black. If you're half black, you're black.
All right, well, then she's, I don't know what she is. I think she's half, what is she, Mike? Mike Schaefer, my producer, says she's half Irish, half black.
All right, that means she's black.
Why does that mean she's black?
Well, you know, you can't be half black, okay? I mean, if you're half black, if you got black in you, you're black.
I don't follow.
Well, you don't have to follow. I mean, that's just the way it is. You know, if you ain't that right, John?
Yeah.
She's right. Yeah. That she's black, she's black. She's half black.
Mike says she's half black. I don't know. I don't know what she is. Does anybody, okay, I got the cover Rolling Stone. I'm looking at her right here. Looks like Mexican or something.
That was the first thing I thought, like she's Mexican. But then my brother said, no, she's a sister. And another guy said, my cousin said, that he thought she was a white woman. I said, no, she's not white. There's something not right. Because there's like black roots there to her hair or something. In other words, like I think she dyes her hair white.
Yeah, she probably, it does. It looks like she's got black roots and she's got bleached hair. Well, if Schaefer's right and she's half Irish, half black, And you're right that anybody who's half black is full black, then she's full black.
She's black.
Right.
Then she is, my brother's right. Hey, Rudolph, you're right, man. I knew it. I knew it. I told you I knew it. All right.
That's all I'm saying. I mean, I think that according to
Well, let me ask you this: is she she's married to a white man, isn't she?
I don't know who she's married to, dude. Hey, wait a second, I got a call here. An Ogden on the Phil Henry Show. Hello,
Mr. Henry.
Yes, hi. Yes, hello. Hello,
Mr. Henry.
Yes, hello,
Mr. Henry.
Yeah.
I think part of them is might be Mexican. I don't know.
What?
Well, it, I don't know. I might be making a mistake, but the half, half of the colored person is a mulatto, but the other one half is, I don't know. That could be anybody, I guess.
So you called exactly why?
No, though, what that old lady's got wrong. If you're half black, you are fully black. You understand?
Okay, she hung up. That was about as bad. That was about as uninstructive a phone call as we. Look, pal, take it from my producer because I got nobody else who can tell you anything smarter than that. She's half Irish. She's half black.
That means she's black.
All right, then she's black. Okay?
All right, man.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot. 1-800-449-8686. If you're part black, you're black, according to that guy. What are you giving me a hard time for? Half Irish, half black. He says you're 1/8 black, you're 1/2 black, you're 1/15 black, you're black. That's according to him. 1-800-449-8686. Let's go to Los Angeles on the Phil Henry Show. Hello.
Yeah, Phil, how you doing?
Good.
I think the young man who called in was essentially right. That's not because it's scientific or racial or anything. That is a perception that if you are one half black, then you are 100% black. You understand? So, in other words, that the idea of being African American is so odious in the minds of some people that if you have 1/8 black blood, or you have 1/9 black blood, or something like that.
Then you are 100% black.
Then you are 100% black, right. You notice that everybody, and I've found this to be particularly interesting, everybody who is 1/8 Indian, you know, in other words, somebody said, well, I'm 1/8 Apache, or I'm 1/8 Cherokee, or I'm 1/4 Chippewa, or I'm 1/2 Sioux. They love to point that out and say, well, that makes me an Indian. That makes me Native American.
Right.
But you never hear anybody say, well, I'm 1/2 black, I'm 1/8 black, I'm 1/4 black. Because if for them to say that means that they are fully black. And it's almost as if it's an infection. And
all right, well, that's a rather negative way of looking at it.
No, it's the realistic way of looking at it. I mean, the only way you can look at it is to look at it that way. And so you asked about Mariah Carey. And
all right, well, the guy called up and said, is she black?
And the point that the young man was trying to make was very, very, was real. And that is, if she is half black, then she is a black woman. And
okay, I'm willing to buy that. I mean, I'm looking at a picture of her right now, and she looks black to me.
She looks black to you?
Yeah.
She don't look black to me, but she is black. You see,
what do you mean she doesn't look?
She, you look at Mariah Carey, she didn't look at anything like a black woman, but she is black because of the fact.
Because she has 1/2 black blood.
Because she had one, yeah. Because 1/2 of her lineage is African American. But when I look at that woman, I'm not looking at a black woman. Sheila, I agree with you. You said she looked Mexican or something. You see what I mean?
All right, let's put it this way. If Mariah Carey showed up at a Nation of Islam meeting, would she be thrown out?
Most likely, yeah.
Why?
Because she don't look black.
But then she could say, hey, my mother was black or something like that, right?
She could make the claim, and that would be up to those brothers whether they want to believe that or not. See, Mariah Carey is black, but I wouldn't be showing up no Nation of Islam. You see what I'm saying? So that's the tough part about being what some people in a very arcane way refer to as mulatto or mulatto, you know, or octoroon or octagon.
What is octoroon?
Well, that's 1/8. All right. And that's what I'm talking about. But you can't, you cannot say, well, she's 1/2, 1/2, 1/2. Once you have black blood in you.
I know. Once you have any black blood in you, you are 1,000% black.
That is absolutely right. You are 100% black. You are a black man. You are a black woman.
Okay, here is Norcross on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello.
Hey, how's it going, Phil?
Fine.
Yeah, I want to comment on this. How do we get parts and halves and fractions?
Are you white or black?
I'm black.
Okay.
I have black parents. I have Irish in my family. I have Indian in my family, but
right.
My parents are both black. My mother is light-skinned, and my father is light-skinned.
So you're black.
And we have dark people in our family.
Right, so you're a black man.
I'm a black man.
So what? And your question is what?
My question is, how do we get fractions for human beings? Who decides if you have one drop of this or that, what you are? Where's the rule book for this?
I don't know. Generally, if your mother's Irish and your father's black, you can say you're half Irish and half black. How about that?
Okay, half and half. That's what I can go with that.
All right, and some people say, well, they got a grandfather who is Irish and a grandmother who is black, but on the mother's side, there was a grandmother who was black and a grandfather who was black, so that's your 1/4 Irish.
See,
and then maybe if you have a great-grand... See, it's basic mathematics, I guess.
But we've gotten to the point where we're dividing human beings.
Well, what do you call Mariah Carey?
I call Mariah Carey whatever she wants to be called.
No, what do you mean what she wants to be called? In other words,
what
do I call you? Do I call you? Do I call you a black man or I call you a white man?
You call me a man. But if you want to call her, you know, Phil.
If I call you a black man, is that correct?
That would be correct.
All right.
If you call me a man,
that would be correct. If I call Mariah Carey a black woman, that is correct.
Well...
All right.
It might be correct.
Why? Because she's black. She's happy.
Because if you have one drop of black blood in you, my friend, you are a black man. And that's the way.
By America.
By the way America perceives you, whether you like it or not. Okay. You are a black man because America does not like the idea of black skin.
Of black skin.
We'll be right back. Phil Hendry here, 1-800-449-8686. We got a pilot on the line. His name is Art Griego. He flies out of Santa Monica, and he wanted to get on the line here to talk about the Alaska Airlines jet going down off the coast of California the other night. Now, there's something else that's going on in Los Angeles that the rest of you across the country would find interesting. It's tragic. It's interesting. It's infuriating. It's a lot of stuff. And it's something that has to do with a division of the Los Angeles Police called the Rampart Division. And the Rampart Division of the LAPD has been said to be the toughest part of town. It's a pretty bad part of town, and the cops that work that area are generally dealing with lots of unsavory types, gangbangers and drug dealers and real hardcore types. So Rampart is not where you want to, you know, run out of gas or get a flat tire. Now, what's happened is there are allegations turning up, and there have been convictions overturned by judges based upon the accusation that LAPD cops in the Rampart Division have set up their callers, the people that they've arrested, shot them. I mean, such odious things as they have, it's been alleged that they have shot suspects and then put guns in their hands. Something you generally thought only was like a device for a television movie or something. It's actually, the allegation is that this actually has happened. Wait a minute. Don't want to strangle myself with a headphone cord, so I always want to get that thing untangled from the leg of the chair. Or the next thing you know, I don't breathe. And when I don't breathe, I turn blue. And when I turn blue, they're going to drag me out of here. They got to throw me down a laundry chute. So the allegation is that they have done these things, paralyzed in one instance, one of the people they arrested, this guy went off the jail time. These people have been in prison. These people set up by Los Angeles Police Department officers from the Rampart Division. All right, that having been said, let me get Art Griego on the line. He is with us in Santa Monica. Mr. Griego, how are you this evening?
I'm very well, Phil. Thank you for having me on your program.
What? You're a pilot, right?
I'm a private pilot. I don't fly commercially, but I am a pilot, and I understand the operation of an aircraft. And I do have friends who have flown, and I've got a large network of friends who are pilots here in the Los Angeles area.
You said that you, and a lot of pilots have been quoted, especially today in the USA Today, there's at least a few pilots quoted as saying there's something wrong with this idea that the vertical stabilizer was what was bad about Alaska Airlines. Now, the idea is that the vertical stabilizer...
Well, the vertical stabilizer is a horizontal stabilizer. Keeps the plane flying straight. If it is malfunctioning, it could go into a steep dive or could go into a steep climb. This just doesn't sound right. I think it needs another look. I can tell you, Mr. Henry, that there are a lot of pilots who don't agree with this stabilizer argument. Phil, no way does a stabilizer spontaneously malfunction the way we have been told it does by certain principles involved in the investigation. That states the NTSB or some of these people who are aligned with Alaska Airlines.
You don't think that this is it's not a common malfunction?
No, by all means, it's not a common malfunction. It's catastrophic. And there isn't a pilot that I know in the Los Angeles area who's buying this. Now, the reason why I called and I asked to speak to you is I know for a fact that the Los Angeles Police Department is under a great deal of scrutiny and stress, and they don't need it right now. You know it and I know it. They don't need the scrutiny that they're under with regard to the Rampart Division investigation. A police department that has officers who would set a man up in the manner that you just described, do you think that they would have a problem bringing down a commercial airliner? And that would be a question that I would ask you before I...
Well, you're asking me, would the LAPD, with officers who are alleged to have committed the crimes that they are alleged to have committed, alleged, my God, the judge is overturning some of these things. So what are you asking me?
I'm asking you.
Are you saying that the Los Angeles Police Department, you're saying the Los Angeles Police Department had something to do with the Alaska Airlines crash?
I'm saying it is a possibility. There are large utility magnets that have been used for a long time by drug dealers, used to separate cocaine from impurities, baby laxative, whatever it has been cut with. These magnets are very powerful. They're used, as I said, in the drug trade. They could be taken and used by some officers who might be interested in trying to get some heat off of the LAPD for this Rampart Division scandal, and the officers could use it to interfere with communications and electronics equipment on a jetliner. Okay. It's an attempt to get some of the public focus off of the Rampart Division scandal.
You're saying that somehow Los Angeles police officers brought down the Alaska Airlines jet with magnets?
Yeah.
What are these?
They are large utility magnets that are used by drug dealers.
And they separate, do they use them in the purifying process?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I know the Rampart Division scandal has been far-reaching, and it may not be national in scope. I don't know how many people listening to me right now outside of the L.A. area know what it is that we're talking about.
I'll tell you something, Phil. In 1996, I spoke with somebody who is very close to the Los Angeles Police Department. And they said this was entirely feasible and that you could create a diversion such as this and create this diversion so as to keep the people's focus off the LAPD. Now, I don't know a pilot in Southern California, and I've been flying for about 20 years, who buys this vertical stabilizer thing.
But how likely is it that the Alaska Airlines jet was brought down by LAPD Ramparts officers?
I don't know, but I'm saying it's something they should look into. Because if they will stoop low enough to set up suspects and to falsify evidence and to go so far as to shoot, illegally, criminally assault a suspect before that person's had the opportunity to have a trial, then I'm telling you, Phil.
This is incredible. You're telling me.
No, but hear me out. I am telling you that.
You're saying that Los Angeles Police Department officers.
I'm not saying officially. I've not in any official capacity.
But some renegade police officers using large magnets that they got off of drug dealers screwed up the communications and electronics equipment on an Alaska Airlines jet and caused it to crash?
That I'm saying is a possibility. Given the scrutiny, Phil, you got to understand, the L.A. Police Department is under more scrutiny and is going through more serious investigation and has more trouble now than it has ever had in the history of the department going back to the 19th century. They are in serious trouble. They need to...
Well, if they brought down an Alaska Airlines jet to take focus off of the Rampart Division scandal, it didn't succeed because in the front page of the L.A. Times today, you got Alaska Airlines jet investigation continues on one side, and on the other side, you've got LAPD Rampart Division scandal.
All right. Well, I'm not saying that their calculations are correct. I'm saying it was a shot taken by these guys to see if they could get some of the focus off them, because I'll tell you something, Phil... The LAPD has never been in more serious shape. And as a pilot, I will tell you that of the other pilots that I've spoken to, a vertical stable, a horizontal stable, this is something that I don't even know what they're talking about.
Well, they're talking about the thing on the back of the plane.
Yeah, what is that? See, that in and of itself is baloney.
What is?
They're talking about something called a horizontal stabilizer. That's something that they're feeding the public to try to get the public to buy into some baloney. I don't even know what a horizontal stabilizer is, because in my experience, I don't think it even exists.
Well, they're saying that it's something electro... You're saying that it doesn't exist.
I'm saying I've never heard of it. So they're throwing out all these terms, horizontal stabilizer, vertical this, vertical drop, the things coming in upside down, all this stuff just to get the focus off of the Rampart Division scandal. In my opinion, and it's only my opinion, but I know a lot of guys who share it. And I can tell you...
I think that you're talking about two completely divergent things. I think that...
Phil, if you're a police officer and you have such low morals that you'd set up somebody and shoot somebody and put drugs in their pocket and put them in prison, an innocent man, do you think you'd care about killing somebody on a jetliner?
I don't know. I don't.
Well, I could answer that question.
I'm sure you think that they... I don't know what the answer to that would be. Maybe they would, but I don't. I find it difficult to believe that these guys have the ability to bring down a jet.
They got the ability. They screwed up an entire police department. They have the technological advice.
What are these magnets you're talking about?
These are really strong magnets that you can point, if you know, that a commercial jetliner is on its way over your airspace. You can point these magnets. They are horseshoe-shaped magnets that you hold on to and point them at a jet as it's flying over. The magnetic field starts to mess with their instruments. And what I think happened is those pilots thought the plane was upside down when, in fact, it was flying perfectly right side up, because they messed up the instrument to the point where these poor guys thought they were upside down or something, because they said the plane hit the water upside down.
So they turned the plane...
They turned the plane over, is what I think happened.
Okay, Art, hold the line, okay?
I'd be very happy to, Phil. I also have a book that I published that...
Okay, hold on, I'll tell you. We'll get that information, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right. 1-800-449-8686. Art Griego, who is a private pilot from Santa Monica, he says that he doesn't know a pilot out there who believes in this horizontal stabilizer story about Alaska Airlines. That's number one. Number two, he thinks that it's possible disgruntled officers from the Ramparts Division in Los Angeles, under investigation for misconduct and abuse of power, they might have been responsible for bringing this jet down. It's too far out there, in my opinion. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show. One 800 449 8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show. Art Griego, a private pilot from Santa Monica, California, joins us on our newsmaker line, and he's talking, at least in his opinion, that this horizontal stabilizer business that they've been talking about the Alaska Airlines jet being affected by, and that possibly the cause of the crash of the Alaska Airlines jet was as the result of a malfunction of this horizontal stabilizer, which is generally there on the tail of the plane. But you say, sir, you don't know what that is?
It just sounds... Yeah, I know what it is, but they're making it into a bigger deal. Than it. I mean, it's not that big of a deal. And I just think that what I'm talking about has got more credence.
That the plane was brought down by disgruntled LAPD officers with giant magnets, or...?
No, just with utility magnets, yes, sir. Not giant magnets. I mean, they're about as big as a man, but a man could hold one. They're
horseshoe shaped.
Yeah, they're red and silver, and horseshoe shaped. If you've seen any of the comparison I can make, if you've seen any of the Warner Brothers cartoons at all, with
like Bugs Bunny.
Right. A lot of times they've used them in those cartoons as well. So. But what they're called utility magnets.
Okay, let's go to Wichita here on the... Because a lot of pilots calling.
Good, bring them on.
All right, Wichita on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello? Wichita?
Hello?
Yes, sir, you're on the air.
Yes, I was just listening to the comments about the stabilizer. And
yeah.
That's a very good possibility, which it controls the pitch attitude of the aircraft.
Well, a lot of pilots that I talk to say that you don't see those things just spontaneously malfunction like that in a catastrophic manner.
One of the possibilities is, are you familiar with the stab actuator?
I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah, it's an electrically driven actuator that will actually run your pitch trim.
Yeah.
Which you have there on your your yoke.
Right.
There's been a cases. I'm not claiming to be an expert on this or anything like that, but on ARC, I work at an aircraft manufacturing company here in Wichita.
Oh, uh-huh.
And there's been cases where those things can do a runaway with you, where for one reason or the other,
doesn't it sound a little far-fetched, though, that that thing would just catastrophically fail like that? I mean, on a commercial...
Yeah, through all the testing error thing.
That's it. And that's what me and a lot of the guys that I talk to... It's a tough one. Now, out here, we got this LAPD deal, and it's possible that you got cops that are setting people up and putting guns in their hands. Why wouldn't they want to bring down a jetliner?
I just personally think that
right.
a malfunction with the
right.
the aircraft would be a lot more liable way of the accident
right.
actually happening.
But when you look at these cops...
Yeah, the idea that somebody's out there with a giant magnet and going to knock down the plane just
right.
to draw attention away from the police department.
Right.
How do you explain the other aircraft? It's also a McDonnell Douglas airplane that had problems flying from Phoenix to Dallas.
You know what I think? I think you got an itchy, jumpy pilot there. I think he heard about all the pilots were aware of the crash, and they heard about the initial... rumor that it might have had something to do with the stabilizers. I think he just had a jumpy pilot. I think he just got nervous. It doesn't happen a lot, but it does happen, and decided to bring it back to Sky Harbor and probably had it run through a bunch of tests it didn't need.
Nervous pilot.
Yeah. These guys get nervous. They get jumpy. And the LAPD, of course, those guys are clicking their heels right now. They are laughing themselves sick in the locker room because we're talking about stabilizers, when you could have had officers out on that beach with a giant magnet.
All right. Thank you, sir. Gentleman of Wichita?
Yes.
Thank you, sir, for your call this evening.
Oh, thank you for
All right, thank you. Here is Sarasota on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello.
Yeah, Phil, hello.
Yes, sir.
John here in Sarasota.
Yes, sir.
Say, I just want to comment about this pilot who has never heard of a horizontal stabilizer, because virtually every airplane from a Piper Cub on up to a 747 That's the horizontal stabilizer back there.
Well, I know
the
that.
Idea of
I
a
know
magnet,
that. I know that.
You know, the idea of a magnet bringing down a jet or any airplane, I think, is pretty unlikely. Something that's, what is it going to do? The magnet might affect navigational systems or compasses or
well,
something
there you go.
If it's close enough?
That's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about it might have affected altitude. It might have affected the orientation of the aircraft in terms of its instrumentation. That's what gets me. That's what I worry about.
And who am I speaking with now?
My name is Art Griego. Yes, sir. I'm out of Santa Monica, California.
Oh, okay. But you say you've never heard of a horizontal stabilizer.
No, I've heard of a horizontal stabilizer, but I mean,
well, it's
what's that all about?
It's on every airplane, from a Piper Cub to a 747.
Well, right, but every pilot I've talked to said that those things just don't go bad. There's something wrong with this whole deal.
No, they can go bad. Let me tell. Okay, I'm just going to say
Well, what about the LAP? What about the magnet idea? That's all I'm asking for you to consider, and you and other pilots to consider.
I cannot imagine a magnet. Let me tell you, L.A. is one of the busiest airport areas in the country.
Yes, sir.
And if they pointed a magnet towards the sky, I cannot believe they could single out one airplane. Anyway, there
yeah, what is the traffic?
Dozens of flying down there.
Well, but first of all, the traffic over Ventura County that time of day, this is a coastal flight.
They said that this is a
air corridor.
What does that mean?
There's a lot of traffic.
There's a lot of traffic.
A lot of traffic
20 miles
in that area.
From LAX
yeah.
Airport.
Okay,
a
so it was up above Ventura.
But you could, if it was low enough, point the magnet. They have directional magnets.
He was 5 miles high and 10 miles offshore. That's a long way for a magnet.
Even with a directional magnet.
That's a long way. A magnet is not going to bring a jet airplane down, believe me. Now,
but we're
I got
talking
38
about a,
years flying.
We're talking about a giant directional magnet.
Well, I've been flying for 38 years, big and little airplanes, and never, ever, ever, like the Bermuda Triangle, I flew through that for years and years and years and never had one iota of a problem.
Yeah, I heard about that deal. Was that the...
That's the area of the Pacific.
That's from New York to Bermuda to San Juan to Miami.
They were losing aircraft in there, right?
Yeah, they did.
Well, yeah.
Never a jetliner.
They were talking about like spacemen, some kind of a goofy thing like that.
Oh, that's hogwash.
Nah.
No, that's hogwash.
I've
yeah, but you're talking about a giant magnet.
I'm talking about a utility magnet.
Not going to bring a jetliner down.
That can be used by a disgruntled police officer.
No.
Well, okay.
Flown most major jets, including 757, 727s, DC-8s, L-1011s, most of them.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I had a flight into Cleveland on one winter night going on up to Toronto.
Right.
And we got what? A jam stabilizer on a 727. Now, that's not an MD-80.
That's what they told you.
But they're all very... No, that's what I knew. I was flying a thing. We could hardly control the pitch. It took two of us.
Well, they're going to tell you that, though.
And we got on the
ground
and
found
out that the mechanical part of it, the jack screw area, had iced up. We were in freezing rain and sleet landing in Cleveland.
I don't see how that's possible.
And it jammed the stabilizer.
It's in Cleveland. It snows there.
I don't get it. I don't understand.